Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Informal Paranormal. It is Sunday night, September 12th, and I'm live here at the studio, and John is out on location at the Haunted Cottage. You there, John?
Yeah, hey, Mike, how you doing? I'm out here at the Haunted Cottage in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. I'm here tonight with Vince Wilson, who's a paranormal investigator and author. He's written the following books, The Ultimate Ghost Hunter, Ghost Science, Baltimore's Guide to Haunted Places, and Ghost Tech. Wired Magazine stated Wilson is perhaps the foremost expert on the technology of ghost hunting in the United States. Hey, Vince.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great, man. Doing great.
For everybody in the show.
Yeah, for everybody in the chat room, I've posted the link so you can go to his website. For those who are listening to the archive, the website address is www.thehauntedcottage.com. And so, Vince, tell us about yourself.
Well, I've been researching the paranormal for a scientific point of view for approximately, I've been recently developed in the past couple of years. Anyway, I've been researching the paranormal for 11 years. I take a very scientific and semi-skeptical approach, although I do believe in ghosts. I believe there's also a scientific explanation for that, which I do not believe makes them any less fantastic. Some people have issues with that theory, but I think it's a possible thing. I think if you're researching souls, you're going to be researching for the rest of your life without coming with any evidence from that, because by their nature, souls are like, would it be like researching angels, for example? You know, how many angels can you tell they have a pin? Just something you can't prove.
Right.
You're researching that for the rest of your life. I believe that ghosts are some kind of energy.
Okay.
We try to take actual existing scientific theory and medical concepts and apply that to ghost research.
Okay, great. And just a reminder for John and Vince, if you guys make sure that you get the cell phones up close to your mouth, we're having audio problems as far as volume. So it's just I think it's a Skype issue, really. But Vince, so tell me about this house. Did you purchase this house knowing it was haunted?
Well, we leased it, technically. We don't actually own that house.
Okay.
We knew about the house for about 3 years. We've heard about its hauntings and that sort of thing. And when we found out that it would be available for us to take, and we jumped on the chance. We had an office in Baltimore that we ran for a year to see if it was feasible to actually have a professional research facility that you could actually do interviews with clients, you know, whatever clients, of course, you don't charge your investigations, we do not. I'm trying to get better reception for you guys.
That's cool.
Yeah. But, we really tried to, make that place work. We found this place was going to be open. We jumped on the chance, and I moved out here to Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, to make this happen. We're not scared to step on some toes in order to get the point across that, you know, we really want to help, in any way, shape, or form, contribute to sharing information and standardizing federal research and so that we take it seriously as a legitimate field of study.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we're trying to do with Paranexus also. You know, a lot of people out there are, I don't know, I wouldn't say fly by night, but they're not trained investigators, and they're really not bringing any scientific information to the front, you know, forefront for anybody to review. And it's just refreshing to hear somebody else talk about this.
Hey, Mike?
Yes.
Fly by night works.
Does it?
Weekend ghost hunters, that works too, I think.
Yeah. Weekend warriors, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, they're doing their thing. But you know, as far as doing scientific research, I don't consider it scientific research when they're not actually providing valuable data for everybody else to use.
The thing is that one of our students said, "Why can't they just be happy being what they are? Why admit that? Hey, we're ghost hunters. We have fun. We travel these places. We're having experiences. We're having good times." You know, why do they have to give themselves the label paranormal investigator, paranormal researcher, when they know they can't be those things? You know. And I just, that's the part I don't understand. You know, just be content with what you have. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You're still going to be popular. You're still going to be respected, but you'll be more respected if you don't claim to be something you're not.
Well, you know? That's in the same genre. If you remember NICAP back in the 50s and 60s that were watching, you know, looking for UFOs, a lot of people were sky watchers, and that's all they did. They did it more for fun. They did it for fun and as club groups. But they never did claim that they were investigators.
That's right. They never tried to be more than what they were. They were happy with that. You know, I don't know what they're thinking. What do they think that there's, you know, there, no one stigmatizes them. You know, there's no one out there saying that it's wrong for you to be called, you're calling yourself a ghost hunter. And you're not going to be, what's going to happen is you're going to be, you know, think about the future. You know, eventually, I think eventually the apparel field will be standardized, you know, to some degree. I think there will be our own version of MUFON, you know, to help delegate standards. And, we're going to look for help from ghost hunters sometimes. You know, ghost hunting, this weekend ghost hunting, the people who are not terrible researchers, we're still going to need them to help and contribute, and they will contribute. They'll be a valuable resource and more. But they're, you know, the ones calling themselves paranormal investigators, paranormal researchers, even parapsychologists. I even see people calling themselves doctor.
I've seen on a couple of websites myself, and I was kind of going, well, I don't remember where you can get a doctorate in that outside of doing metaphysics courses, but even then, you know.
It just amazes me that, you know, they're labeling themselves doctors and claiming to have PhDs and in parapsychology and stuff like that. You know, there's only a few parapsychologists left in the country, and they actually went to colleges for that purpose.
Right.
Mike.
Yeah.
You know, I think the University of Somalia will, for $9.95, make you a doctor of ghostology.
Oh, really? Well, I need to get on that.
So, you know, one of the things that, you know, bothers me, you know, just in terms of how people have just totally changed all the various names and titles, and it's like they've lost the meaning, you know. Like everyone, you know, it's like Vince was saying, everyone's calling themselves, you know, a researcher. Well, you know, half the groups, all they do, their research is like take a photo, grab an audio, and it ends right there. You know, they post it on their site. You know, it's like a trophy. And, you know, that's not how we're going to end up knowing more about this field. You know, that's not going to contribute to the knowledge base, and that's not going to contribute to this field, you know, becoming more professional.
Yeah. Well, you know, as far as collecting data and having a larger database, yeah, that's wonderful. But as far as them actually carrying it any further, I've never really seen too many groups do that.
Hello?
You there? We're here.
I don't hear him anymore.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, he's there. I can hear you coming through.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they're probably back. The connection got screwed up.
Okay, can you call him?
I can call him back in just a second, folks, and I'll get Vince back in here.
All right. Well, I'll talk a little bit about.
There he is.
There he is.
Okay.
The Haunted Cottage here is a research center and training center. This has amassed quite a library of paranormal-related books. What, 400? We've got about 400 books here in the library. And there's rooms filled with, I don't want to say memorabilia, but actually there's movie memorabilia.
Yes, there is.
About how these movies have impacted our field.
Fiction in general.
Yeah. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell them about the various parts of the museum here.
All right. In the museum, we have displays on the walls representing the spiritualist movement, other famous cases, individuals, the evolution of parallel research, going all the way back to Pliny the Younger, who wrote the first rattling chains ghost story. We have display cases representing Hollywood and fiction's influence on the paranormal. And we have, famous individuals who, like J.B. Ryan, Dale Kasperic, Lloyd Auerbach, Troy Taylor, represented themselves in the museum. And then we have a library of over 400 books on the paranormal, supernatural, history, science, and the occult. All very different subjects, and we have a research center and training center for investigators that can seat up to 35 people.
Oh wow! Okay, cool. So you actually, do you actually have? So it's just more or less courses on learning how to do investigations, the history of stuff like that, right?
That's correct. We're trying to revive ghost hunter. Would be paranormal researchers. New ghost hunters, where the origins, where the all these techniques come from, how to properly use the technology, what is their these techniques of technology, and what are their limitations? They don't hear this stuff. People jump into the fray these days and hear science and magic and supernatural and metaphysics and new age stuff, and
right.
They're told that somehow all that's true. All of it's true. Well, how could that be possible?
Well, that's true. There's like, for instance, the Paranexus Academy. We have several courses that actually train paranormal investigators, train them how to be lead investigators for a team. The important parts of how the operations around paranormal investigations. That way, when they get in the field, they don't have any issues as being professional and actually getting quality data.
That's a good point. The other thing is that a lot of people get involved in here and they don't have any sort of beginning. They don't have any sort of, place to start off from. Once again, they're told, all these concepts are out there and they don't have a place, they don't have a true starting point. They never learn about anything about where we came from.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And you got to know where you came from to know where you're going. And so you don't repeat
exactly.
The same mistakes,
Yeah.
I find it fascinating that you guys have leased out this home and actually set up a museum here. It's just from the pictures alone, it looks pretty sharp.
Oh yeah, earlier you mentioned about putting EVP up on websites. And I think you should put EVP up on websites, but don't do it like you said as a trophy. Do it to share with other people. Put it up there to say, hey, we recorded this EVP. What do you, as the paranormal community, think of what we got? Is this legitimate? I posted some EVP up on the Haunted Cottage website. But the last thing I wrote on what happened was, "What do you think of what we got?" Because everybody talks about sharing, and you go to any conference, out there, any conference, and there'll always be someone up there saying, "We need to share. We need to share information." Who's doing that though?
Well, that's one thing we're doing that at Paranexus.
Well, that's good. Somebody needs to do, more people need to start doing it. How are we going to, I know some people don't put, evidence up on websites because they're scared that people are going to steal it. Yes, that happens. That's stupid, but it happens. But what are you going to do about it? You have a ritual piece. That's good. That should be good enough. Put stuff up on the website anyway. Give out your EVP. As long as you're not giving away, like, a residential address or something like that, come up. Let people know and share their information and get opinions from your peers.
Right, and there's actual ways to put your information on a file. That way they cannot steal it. So
yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing people need to, if they would educate themselves, they would realize there's no reason not to share. You
exactly.
know?
Well, you know, I was on a team years ago, and that particular team, the leader wouldn't let us list what our equipment was because he didn't want the other teams to know what we had and then copy us.
If you do a good thing, you shouldn't be worried. Hey, look, we that's silly.
That's a nice way of describing it. Yeah.
Yeah. We made these standardized forms a few years ago. I think I showed them. Did I show them to you on the wall yet? We designed these very standard forms. They're available on ParallelCoalition.com and also at GhostScience.net for free. We give them away. Here's our forms in a PDF file. Use them. We think they're great. The only thing we ask is that, hey, just mention that, hey, you got it from us. Now, of course, years later, we see them on a half a dozen websites, no mention of who designed them, and people saying, they're their forms. Whatever, I don't care. You know, if they're using these forms, that's good for them. I don't care. Maybe they got from somebody else who told them that they designed it. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not worried about getting credit for it as long as people are actually using the forms. And people worry about these trivial selfish things, but they should be worried about the field as a whole. Of course, any researcher worth their salt, you know, wants to be respected. Everybody wants to, you know, get credit for the hard work they put into it, and you will. But don't worry about, you know, getting a TV show or getting interviewed and stuff like that. You know, that's just silly.
Yeah. Well, I got a question. You guys ready to do a walk around?
Sure, especially the kid. We're not trying to deck right now.
to make sure you have reception.
Yeah. Where do you want us to go to first?
Well, I was just going to say if it's a reception issue. If you're having a reception issue, and you know this stuff pretty well. I mean, you can hang out on the porch and tell us. I've just put the link in the chat room for the overhead view of the first floor so everybody can actually see what he's talking about.
Matt, I think I do have the video camera working now, by the way. You want to try that out yet?
Yeah, let me see if I can get it to come up. Just a second. Hey, John, go ahead and talk to me for a second.
All right, yeah. When you first walk into the museum here, this is where you see there's a wall that deals with spiritualism movement and the showcases with basically how, you know, Hollywood has influenced our field. And then there's quite a few old-style cameras here on display, which are, I'm kind of an old camera buff, and I'm really kind of enjoying seeing all the various pieces here because there's definitely some cameras you don't see every day. Now, Vince, are these, on loan? Are these all yours?
Everything in here is mine, currently. Yeah. I'm a big old camera collector myself. These are old-fashioned Brownies and Rolls cameras, that sort of thing. And we have a little replica of a few items from Harry Price's, the famous ghost hunter from England. We have a replica of some of the stuff that he would have used, a fingerprint kit, a compass, talcum powder, stuff like that, you know, on display. We have a basic enticement experiment set up on a shelf, which uses reproduction historic money and playing cards and a pocket watch to try to see if a ghost will react with it. Also some classic EVP recording devices, including a reel-to-reel recorder with microphone. We have a wall that displays the ancient history of the paranormal, the story of King Croesus, who did possibly the first paranormal psychic research experiment. We have representations of famous cases like Tina Resch, the Poltergeist case from Texas, The Entity, largely researched by Barry Taft, The Bell Witch, The Bowling Rectory. We have, biographies on J.B. Ryan and Dale Kastnerik and, Harry Price and a few other people, on display here.
Nice. Very nice. Now, this live camera view that I'm looking at, is this actually your auditorium, more or less, to teach everybody?
That's right. That's our meeting room. That's where we actually do our instructions at. Where we do our workshops, our meetings. This is where people can come and watch documentaries as well. We have a huge video documentary collection on old hauntings and famous cases and stuff like that.
Right.
But none of the new TV series.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
there's I'm not too much of a fan of reality TV myself. So.
I always describe the TV series. Bill, why don't you tell us, if you will, what are your thoughts just in terms of what have the reality TV shows done in the community, either positively or negatively, in your opinion?
There's positive and a lot of negative. Positive is it brought the attention that people can't get involved in this, Negative is it makes anybody think they can get involved in it. People will say, hey, look, these guys have crappy jobs. I have a crappy job. They're part of something magical. I want to be part of something magical, and they jump into it. Now, the thing is, we have a lot of bitter people involved now. These are people, and I was talking to, the people who, get into it and they fail at it. All right? Oh, I can't write an article. Turns out I can't write a book. It turns out nobody wants me to be on TV. Oh, that sucks. So they go and become like, they go off and they start like a radio show. Like your radio show, you want to have people on that will talk about ghosts and hauntings, right? You want to talk about the latest theories and places that they go to.
Right,
and stuff like
the investigations of paranormal, right.
Yeah, but you say TV shows, you don't say the name of a show. You don't call out people and bash them or try to destroy them, that sort of thing. And that's extent people do. When they fail at the...
Oh, we just lost them.
Oh. Is that better? Am I back?
Oh, you're back. Okay.
Okay. When these bitter people, they start a radio show or a blog or something like that, and they start calling names out and insulting people. And these are people... Hey, some of these people, I think... Yeah, maybe they deserve it a little bit, however, there's, I don't think, truth be told, in reality, no one deserves that,
No.
Who are these people to say that they can, do this sort of thing? A lot of them got kicked off of teams or whatever, and they're bitter about it. It's the same thing to see all this drama and backstabbing in this when it's supposed to be a field of research. Yeah, it feels like a high school club instead.
Right. And it probably needs to stay at that level if they're acting that way.
Exactly. So, until that stops, there's another thing that needs to stop before we can move on to a serious field of study. And unfortunately, that's probably going to require the cancellation of at least half or more of these TV shows. When this fad is over, then that's probably the only time we can actually start to try to do stuff seriously. We might have to wait a couple of years until these shows are off the air before we try to do anything. We can start doing stuff now, but realistically, I don't see anything really happening for us, until these shows are gone. And yes, they have positive aspects as well. In fact, some of the ghost researchers on these shows even admit, hey, this is not how we really ghost hunt. This is what we do for the network, And I can respect that to some degree. I don't want to bash a lot of all these. I've met a few of these people. They're not all that bad, the thing is that the negative that comes out of it kind of overwhelms any positives.
Okay. Well, I have a question from a chat room. I don't know whether or not you would know this. Is there any academic paranormal research going on at the college since the departure of J.B. Ryan?
Well, the Ryan Institute continued. They actually named it after him, and that continues. But it's a very private, organization. That's not welcome. Not open to letting a lot of people join up and do research with them. So that's the problem with that. And as far as college courses, you'll see every once in a while someone, you know, teaching at a community college or something like that, but they could be anybody. It's not necessarily, you're not necessarily dealing with a parapsychologist, you're dealing with a weekend ghost hunter, a weekend warrior.
Wow.
You know, because anyone can teach at a community college if they think it'll make some money for them. Anyone can rent out a school room and do classes. You know, if you split the bill with the college, you know, so that doesn't really count as an actual parapsychology class, as far as I'm concerned.
Man.
Before we went in here tonight, we were talking about essentially the fact that there are a lot of groups out there that aren't doing right by people when they're doing their investigations. And you mentioned that you have a project you're working on right now to help media understand better in terms of knowing when you're dealing with a legitimate research group and clowns.
Mm-hmm.
So can you kind of go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I'm working on an article right now that hopefully will help individuals and the media be able to actually find educated, well-tenured investigators, people actually know the history, the background, people that know the difference between a poltergeist and a demon, you know, people who can, you know, who can actually do real research at a location. You know, a lot of times these people watch these TV shows, they encounter a poltergeist agent, all right, something that's not even a ghost as far as most paranormal researchers are concerned. And they label it a demon. They say there's a demon here. You know, is that the kind of person you want to come to your house and do an investigation?
Right. Well, you know, I would say it's more of a theory, but I figure that people in death are, you know, if they're bad in life, they're bad in death, and I have a hard time believing in the demon theory. So.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, by the way, just moved the library. We're looking at the library here right now. So if you're on the webcam, you see the library.
Yeah.
I try to roll it around a little bit. I was able to set up this little park in a couple of minutes. Here we go.
Oh, great.
There's one of our books there.
Good deal.
And, let's see.
Hey, and if by chance, whenever I loaned my copy of Ghost Pep to, I need it back. So if you're listening, get me my book back.
Well, believe it or not, a new issue of Ghost Tech is on the way. We're actually working on a new Ghost. I'm actually working on a new Ghost Tech book, and hopefully I have it ready in a few months. So by the end of this year, you'll actually see a new edition of Ghost Tech finally come out.
Oh, cool!
So the last one was in 2004.
Yeah, I'm looking at this shelf. What are those mason jars you have up on the shelf?
Those are artifacts we found around the house.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's up there just to take up some shelf space. We have, you know, over, 400 books here on just about every subject. We even have a little library, a bookstore we're trying to set up. Right now, the bookstore only composes of these shelves right here. And we're selling a couple of DVDs that some people dropped off also. And, you know, for any researchers want to buy, come by, we're trying to make this bookstore, you know, come to life. So we're always working on new things. To get
you. Oh, you there?
Yeah, we're still here. Hey, Vince, obviously you're not a weekend warrior or a dabbler or anything. I mean, you've been on the kind of cutting edge of all this for a long time. And, you know, your ghost tech book, I think it was the first, like, technical-oriented book that I got in dealt with paranormal equipment.
Yeah.
I want to say around 2005 or so.
Four, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I really certainly found it very, very helpful and interesting. In terms of, it's 6-7 years later, technology, the wheel is fun.
Yeah.
It's a different place. What do you see in terms of, what's the new piece of technology you think is going to really have an impact on our field?
I think one of my favorite pieces of equipment right now is the Meltmeter. I think it's a very good piece of technology. It does what it's supposed to do. I think a very bad piece of equipment is the K2 meter. It doesn't do as advertised to do. It's people who use that meter, they're fooling themselves when they think they have ghosts.
Well, I was going to say, doesn't the K2 meter also pick up cell transmissions and all kinds of other things?
Well, the problem is that every AC EMF meter has a certain sensitivity to radio frequency, but you cut it off at 10,000 hertz, which doesn't account for many pieces of technology. However, the K2 meter has a sensitivity of 20,000 hertz, which means it can pick up pretty much every kind of technology that has RF built into it. Sorry.
That's okay.
That includes RF chips, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, garage door openers, cell phones, satellite speakers, even components built into those energy-saving light bulbs they have now, give off RF.
So if someone's going to buy inexpensive, if they couldn't pony up the $120 or $30 for a millimeter, and you're looking at the AC style meters, which one would you recommend at that end?
If they couldn't afford a $120 millimeter, I would recommend either the very simple Dr. Gauss meter, the standard for 15 years now. For good tutters, or even the Elm Zone meter, which is only $13 on a lot of occasions. They're durable, they're virtually indestructible, and they're simple and straightforward. So if you want more accurate readings, I would go with the cell sensor or the Gauss meter. Of course, the cell sensor now has ghost meter on it a lot of occasions. The manufacturer clearly picked up on the fact that a lot of parallel researchers were buying it. But, profiting off of that name doesn't mean it's an inaccurate device. It does work. It does do what it says it's supposed to do. And I appreciate that much. And, hey, they want to call it a ghost meter, fine. It's still, it's just an EMF meter, though. You know.
Okay. Hey, John, see if you can speak a little closer to your cell phone so we can pick your voice up better.
Okay. I've had a couple of those ghost meters over the years, and my only complaint is that when you drop them, they're done.
Oh yeah, they're crappy as far as that's concerned. Yeah.
They don't, a 3.5 foot drop, and you now have plastic shards, So if you don't drop them, they're pretty good.
Yeah, the original black cell sensor, the one that had the black casing, that was much more durable.
That's the one that had like an external.
Yeah, the external fob. Yep.
So Vince, if you're willing, can you share with us what was it that got you started on this path?
You know what it was? Ironically, a TV show. In Search Of. Remember In Search Of?
Oh,
Leonard Nimoy?
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy.
Yep, I used to love that show. It frightened me and excited me at the same time to think that there are wonders out there, the Search Of tried to explain them. Oftentimes, they would have some sort of scientific expert on their state. This is why Bigfoot's real. This is what ghosts might be. Maybe some kind of electromagnetic energy. This is the first time I ever heard of these. But the kicker was, what really got me on that path, the curiosity, which made me read every book I could get my hands on, going back 30 years. Was the 1979 episode of That's Incredible, where they had the Toys R Us ghost. You remember that?
You have to remind me of that.
All right. And it's the That's Incredible episode. They used an antiquated, by today's standards, thermal imaging camera to try to get a picture of a ghost in this haunted Toys R Us in Sunnyvale, California. Now, back then, thermal imaging cameras required a counterbalance against room temperature, and they actually had to pour liquid nitrogen into a tank around the camera. That's how old this stuff is. We have room temperature thermal imagers today. They did not have it back then. They had to put liquid nitrogen around it. And daughter Steve would always come off the camera until they capped it off. They had to pour it in liquid nitrogen. But anyway, they entered down this one hallway, the Toys R Us, and they are standing at the end of a hallway. It's a ghost, kind of with its knee bent, with a camera, kind of stand like this, except without a cell phone in his hand, of course. Google images, of course, it'll pop right up. If you go to Google images and put in Toys R Us ghost, it should come right up. But that show you know, set me down that path ever since then. You know, and 10 years ago, actually about 11 years ago, a friend of mine started doing these little ghost hunts to haunted bridges and battlefields, and I started applying science. And I tried to point to those, are we doing this right? And at least, you know, we were originally basing everything on this one book that we got from off of the internet, and it told you about the meters, didn't tell you how they worked or why you're using them, and then while on this bridge in Bowie, Maryland, someone says, oh, I've seen that thing before, it's a ghost detector. I'm looking at it like, and I'm looking at this and I said to myself, is this what this does? Is it detect ghosts? I said, I bought the package, he said it was a EMF meter. And so I actually made some phone calls. I started calling Wood Auerbach, Troy Taylor, and, you know, people who had much more experience than I did. And asking them, you know, I bought their books and listened to what they had to say, and, you know, and started, you know, practicing serious paranormal research after that. And I, you know, I made a lot of mistakes. I admit that, you know, but I learned from my mistakes and don't repeat them.
Well, you know something? That's what makes a good investigator, doesn't it? I mean, seriously, that's you go out, you find what works, what doesn't, and then you start adding to your toolbox what works, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point here, you know, with these investigators, or I should say these ghost hunters, they don't do that. They just go out and get the trophies and come home. And
yep.
You know, and they're doing the time. That's what's amazing me is they spend so much time out in the field and they don't even realize that all this time they're spending out there, they're gaining valuable evidence and not doing a damn thing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the EVP end, in my opinion.
All right, I want to see if I can move this clock into the paragraph cable. Move it
to the... All right. So how old is this home?
It's approximately 100 years old. Here we are. We're in the museum now.
Okay, you just broke up. Go ahead and say that again.
I said we're in the museum now.
Okay, so how old did you say this place was?
Approximately 180 years old.
Wow.
Yep, it's we only know a little bit about the history, to be honest with you. In Jefferson County, West Virginia, the record keeping around here going back more than 30 years is atrocious. And we only know this much information from architectural historians. We know that possibly 12 people died here from a computer record that said simply number of deaths on property, 12. We don't even know who they were, when they died. We're not going to make stuff up to get people to come out here. You know, we want to be honest and truthful. Any information we learn from other people, from other people. You know, this is not actual... something that we encountered here ourselves.
Right.
You know, since we moved in here, though, we have had a few experiences. We've heard footsteps and voices and singing, and we've had a couple instances where doors have opened by themselves. And very subtle stuff. You know, it's not like in the movies where, you know, toys fly around and, you know, the walls bleed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
That's very cool. Very cool. I was going to ask you also, do you have you captured anything on video or anything like that?
Yeah, still trying. We're trying to do more webcasts, more video surveillance. Some people said they once saw a rocking chair in our service quarters. Rock back and forth. And that is archived. If some of the listeners want to check out the archives at livestream.com/thehauntedcottage, they're welcome to check out those archived videos. They see anything. So we recently hung up streamers in there, too, little party streamers, to see if there's any interaction with us for that. Very simple experiment. People don't appreciate the old school stuff. You know, they're all the technology. You know, we'd like to hang up these paper party streamers and, in a grid from the ceiling using tacky tape that won't stain the paint or wallpaper. And we make sure we block off any possible vents or drafty areas. We put towels by doors and windows. And we see if anything appears to walk through those streamers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a classic experiment. Just put a video camera there, and you're good to go.
Okay, cool. Very cool. So, for yourself, as far as the equipment that you care, if you were going to go out in the field and do a live investigation, what would be your, let's say you had to pick two different items, what would you carry with you?
I would bring my camera, a film camera, and probably a notepad.
And a notepad.
That counts as equipment. And that was it. I might bring a EMF compass or EMF detector just to try to, maybe hold it on some hot spots or something like that. So probably the most important equipment is a camera to take with you.
Okay.
Just your notes, sticky notes and that sort of thing. And, a video camera with a camera built into it would probably be better still.
What you're saying, in essence, is the sheer fact that the person's on location and them being the piece of equipment and you making notes on what's going on is just as important as the photography. Okay, you've died off again. Hang on a second. Let me see.
Memory is subjective. Memory is very subjective. If you want to be taken seriously, you have to take notes. A voice recorder for taking personal notes would probably be a good idea, too, not necessarily even for EVP.
Okay. Good deal.
It is what upstairs, you're showing a room that you had, it was a child's room that you staged.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us why you did that?
It's an enticement experiment to see if any ghosts may interact with the optics in the room. Also, it's staged that way for training. We bring investigators up there and say, look, here is a room that has a bed, it has a chair. How would you research this room? We let them go through and we show them what we suggest would be a good way to research that room. We base our experiments, our research techniques on archaeological concepts and also police investigation techniques.
Okay.
We only allow one person in the room at a time with one piece of equipment at a time. One person does a grid walk of the room, eliminate all possible artificial sources, and then the second person writes down what information they get at the door. You want to have as little a footprint in that room as possible when actually taking readings.
But, Vince, my problem with that is that sounds like work. That doesn't sound like fun.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, I mean, seriously, though, to be an effective investigator requires you to do a lot of stuff that's tedious, and it's not fun,
The thing is, and ultimately it's rewarding.
Absolutely.
Even 90% of the cases we go on, we find some logical explanation for it as opposed to those.
Right.
And to be perfectly honest with you, that the 10% makes it worthwhile.
Oh, I can imagine. So you're telling me I can't go in large groups into one little room?
No, you can't do that. You should do that. If it was 50 degrees in here, somebody is steppy. What's going on? The demon. It's never going to go.
Absolutely. So do you actually have any actual demonstrations on how orbs or dust particles and so forth?
Yeah, well, the demonstration I always like to do is I have a group of people, they're eager to hear about orbs, right? And every time someone does orbs, I always do this. I take them into our library, which has original floorboards in the ceiling. All right? I take a picture of them with a digital camera, and I say, take for pictures. I said, look, you see the orbs? And usually they'll say, no, there's no orbs in it, right? And I say, okay, I'm going to take another picture. Go back to your original position. I take a second picture. And I hit the ceiling with my fist as hard as I can without breaking my knuckles. and a shower dust comes out. I take another picture. And I say, look, all the orbs. I must have pissed off the ghost when I hit the ceiling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's a good demonstration, though.
Yeah, I tell people, I said, look, whatever your excuses are, they're not ghosts, okay? 99.9% of all orbs are not ghosts. Unless you see it with your own eyes or it projects light onto objects around it, it's not an orb. It's not a true paranormal phenomenon. It's dust. It's moisture. It's bugs in the air. It's your dandruff. You know? It's anything but ghosts.
But the other thing is, even if you do capture a light-emitting object called an orb, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's a ghost. I mean, that just means that it's a light-producing object. You know,
it could be a ball on a string with a light stick inside of it.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
We're getting an overlap between the cell phones. Kind of get some either face away from each other or get some distance between each other so we don't have the overlap on the audio. Because I'm actually picking up both your voices through the cell phones. We're getting an echo.
Two rooms apart. Right?
There you go.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, even if you have a light-emitting anomaly, you can't attribute to anything faked or, you know, it could just be, what I'm saying is that in itself doesn't mean that it's a ghost.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I actually have an example of what you're talking about right here. Here's your orb. We call this George, by the way. This is George the Orb. You can see it on the video camera now. There you go.
Chinese lantern?
People. Yeah, something like that. It's just a plastic ball, actually. You know, but the point is that these people, they've done stuff that happened so bad, they don't allow themselves to be fooled by anything. All they're interested in is they don't have the patience, they don't have the attitude for doing this. So they just allow anything to bleed through that, you know, that's why they like the KT meter so much. Anyone who likes KT.
Okay, we just lost you again. There you go. You're back in. Go ahead.
Okay. So anybody who likes the KT meter is looking for evidence for the sake of evidence. You know, they don't care where it comes from. It's when something exceptional happened to them.
Right. Well, that's what we find out a lot with, different people that come into our group and first join up. You know, they're expecting a lot of, glitter and glam in it, and they don't realize how much work's involved. They don't realize the percentage of stuff that's actually just human creation, I guess, for a better word of it. You know, and I think it actually disheartens some people, but the hardcore people that really want to learn this stuff seem like they really stick with it. They want to learn. They're there for the whole entire, you know, the whole ride to find out what's really going on. And what amazed me, you know, so when we started Paranexus, we figured we'd have a flood of people wanting to learn. Well, that hasn't really been the case because it seems like everybody likes roller coasters.
Yep. If you want glitter and glam, wear a rhinestone uniform. You know, but otherwise, be patient, stick with it, standardize yourself and you'll be fine.
Right. See, we've actually developed, I don't know if you've read it yet, we've got it on our website, it's called the Cypress Standards, and it's procedures and standards for paranormal investigators to go by, so they actually have professional investigation techniques.
That's fantastic. You know, that's what paranormal research field actually needs.
Right.
You know, some kind of standardization.
Right, and that's what we're trying to achieve at Paranexus, and I love what you're doing. That's just, that's wonderful, man. I wish more people would step forward that know what they're doing and try to teach others.
Well, the other thing we want to do is, the other concept we really want to do is, and this is not for profit, probably the word I'm about to use is probably not an appropriate word since we're not talking about the usual sense. But we would like to, in some way, franchise the haunted concept
Okay, you broke up again.
When I say franchise, I don't mean in the sense that we would, you know, make any money for any new haunted cottages. I mean, we would like to see other ones open up. Other places used specifically for the purpose of training new paranormal investigators. You know, look in your area for old farmhouses. See if you can find some landowner who would be willing to rent out a, you know, your haunted farmhouse at the end of the street or something like that. You know, do some research. You look for places that are supposed to be haunted and see if there are people who are willing to lease those out or rent it. You know, you find it's very rewarding, you know. They actually train new investigators. You know, we do tours here, and even the tours have an educational aspect. We put a lecture in there, a different lecture. Like last month was paranormal history. This month is the science of the paranormal. And next month, of course, will be, you know, the history of Halloween and how that has influenced paranormal fiction and that sort of thing. You know, and then we let people go walk around with ghost hunting technology, and we train them on the proper ways of using it. So they're having fun, but they're also learning too, you know. And that's what pays your bills here, that sort of thing. We don't try to rip people off. We're just trying to pay for the electric and the rent.
There you go.
You know, yeah. So, you know, it's just, you know, we work really hard to try to make this place come across professionally and be taken seriously.
And that's what it takes. So, do you actually live there?
Yes, I have a one-bedroom apartment and an office and an area where my foosball table is.
Oh, that's
cool. Yep, and that's, you know, that's all used. That's, you know, that's my private area right there where I do my write my books and do my private research. And it only takes a very, very small portion of the house.
Oh, cool.
You know, most of the entire rest of the house, 90% of it's used for ghost hunting.
Okay.
For research and training.
Well, how much have you actually witnessed in the house yourself?
I haven't seen anything yet, except for once I just see a door open. I actually videotaped the person who was there with me. I asked him to repeat what he had seen. If you go on the website, it's there now. TheHauntedCottage.com. You know, I was telling him the story about how I heard these footsteps in this one room. And as we're standing there, you hear a little metal slide, some sort of sliding metal sound, and then the door creaks open. The actual latch of the door actually went up, slid across, and then the door opened right in front of us.
Wow.
On the video, did that...
No, unfortunately, we weren't videotaping at the time. I did want to videotape his eyewitness account of it. That door right there behind you, actually, is the one that did that.
Okay.
When I do this part of the tour of the house, I always flash the door first because I know the person's going to up the ladder to look inside the servants' quarters. So the ladder, whatever, here, I'll actually bring it up to the area I'm talking about on the webcam. There's the door, and I always latch that door so if anyone goes up the ladder, they won't get knocked off from somebody coming in from the backyard for safety reasons.
Okay, that type of latch, gravity doesn't affect it. The only way that latch can slide is if something moves it.
Exactly. You know, and he tells me in detail of what happened. He actually accused me. He said, "Did you set that up?" I said, "No, you're free to examine it all you want. I did not set that up." I was as shocked as he was when it actually happened.
Oh, wow. That'd be pretty wild. I've had a few things happen to me, but I really hadn't had anything on that level. Where I actually saw a latch move and the door open, so.
Yeah, mostly hauntings are very subtle. You know, I was saying earlier, if you have kids, and you go into the kitchen, you see a glass of orange juice spilled over. Are you going to blame the kid or blame a ghost? You'll blame the kid, you know? You know, if you're in an office and you see someone spill coffee all over the counter, you're going to think it's a clumsy coworker, or you're going to jump to the conclusion of it's a ghost. You're going to blame the coworker, of course, you know? That's why most people don't even realize they're actually in a haunted location sometimes, because it's so subtle they're not picking up on it.
Well, you know, you are dealing with people still.
Yeah.
So they're going to do the same things, you know. And so you're going to you're going to associate what would logically make sense.
If I didn't talk to a person who doesn't believe when you die, you get ghost powers. Ooh, I can walk through walls now. I had to go to ghost college to learn how to scare people now. And, you know, I need to get to the other side. And I need to find that white light everyone talks about.
Well, we're down to the last 4 minutes. Is there anything you'd like to tell everybody about as far as your location and what times to visit and things like that?
You know, weekends are always good. Call ahead and make sure I'm not out. That's something I can do. I travel out of town to do lecturing. But, you know, we're always here for training. We're trying to make this place the number one training facility in the country. And we'll do everything in our power to make that happen. You know, to be taken seriously and be respected.
Okay, good.
HauntedCottage.com. For upcoming events, we have, you know, some events coming up at Halloween. Can't avoid that, of course. and also, we will be having Lynn Bauer back.
Okay, you cut out on us again. Go ahead.
In December of this year, the weekend of December 3rd,
yes.
We'll have Lynn Bauer back. You hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Lloyd Auerbach and Dr. Barry Tan from the Entity Case lecturing together for the first time ever, and both of them for the first time ever together on the East Coast will be lecturing here at the Haunted Cottage.
Oh, man, nice.
Yeah, if you want to be part of that and actually see that event, you can go to the ghostconference.com for more information on that.
Okay, good deal. John, is there anything you want to say?
I just want to talk about next week's show, Sunday the 19th. We're going to have author Robert Graves. He's written a book called The Art of Psychic Dice, and he will be discussing how to develop your psychokinetic abilities. And he kind of takes a rather unique approach and has you learn how to develop those abilities at a casino craft table.
Oh, okay.
So it's an interesting book. He's an interesting man. I think people are going to enjoy our conversation with him.
Okay, great. And looks like this Thursday, September 16th at 9 p.m., we've got a special 90-minute show with Gregory P. Kent, Psychic Perspective. We'll be having Michael Brooker on. He'll be interviewing him. And we've actually got a new website up called paraplanet.org, which actually has links to all reputable websites for everybody to go check out. And if you have any URL suggestions, just email us, and we'll have them posted for you. And outside of that, guys, if you'll hang on, and we'll go ahead and start the exit music, and I'll holler at you in just a second.
All right.
All right, everybody, everybody have a good work week, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.